Voglio una vita maleducata di quelle vite fatte, fatte così. Voglio una vita che se ne frega di tutto sì.
All right, and it is 9 a.m. in the West Coast, it is noon in the East Coast, and it's 7 p.m. in Jerusalem, Israel, the Holy Land. Today is August 6th, 2015, and this is Orly Benny Davis with The Impossible Truth. Today on BBS Radio Studio One, we are going to talk about, we're going to celebrate Wednesday show with wishing happy birthday to the President of the U.S. that celebrated his birthday yesterday, and we are going to wish best wishes also to Minister Sylvan Shalom that had his birthday the same day yesterday. And we're going to talk about what's happening in Europe while everybody is ready to go on vacation there. And, of course, it's Wednesday, so we're going to have all Italian music. It's a time to relax. It's a time to have some fun. It's a time to wrap it up. And looking back at the year of action that we all had and the work that everybody made and the governor of the world that were playing a big role, we think we all need a vacation. But there are some like us that will stay put, giving you the news, keeping you warm, and tell you that the world is beautiful. So hang on, and I hope that we're going to have a great show. Let's listen to some startup music after we had that Vita Spericolata, the life of, I want a life that it will be crazy without any meaning, without any care. That's the way we started the show. I mean, this vacation time is going to be wild. All right, let's go through some music, and after we'll start the show. All right, and we are back, and this was Claudia Baglioni, Adesso Tu. You know, it's one of the classic love song that we're saying, you know, there is now you that change my world. There is now that you make my heart beat harder and faster. And life changes when you meet somebody who can make yourself happy again and make you feel like you are born again. And maybe get all your thinking and all your hopes up and hope for a wonderful, turnout of events. And of course, now we all good until nature is calling and asking for some attention. We have a big, big typhoon on the way for all the eastern part. Let's listen to this. It's terrifying.
You know, we had a category one that almost turned into a category. You know, we had a category into a category two storm that directly impacted our island here in Saipan and the island of Tinian. What it did was there were winds of approximately 100 knots with gusts of maybe about 130 knots, and it caused widespread extensive damage, probably the worst damage that the Northern Marianas has experienced in the last 30 years. It has impacted our power system. Our main power plant with four generators is currently offline, as well as there's no power anywhere on the island. They're anticipating it's going to take 3 to 4 weeks to restore the power. There were probably 300 or 400 power poles that were that collapsed during the storm. So there were many, many roads that were impassable due to the power lines on the road.
What about housing? Are people okay for housing, or are there people in emergency
shelters? For housing, we've got approximately 500 people, 500 individuals in government shelters right now. Many of those individuals and families are there clearly because their homes have had major damage or have been destroyed. So we're working with our government partners now to look for some short-term as well as long-term housing and shelter opportunities for those families.
This sounds like it's had a particularly severe impact. You wouldn't think it would happen from a Category 1 or 2 storm.
Yeah, it seems, you know, we haven't really gotten the final statistics from our local U.S. National Weather Service, but I think that because the eye of the storm passed directly over the island, we were just more severely impacted than normally. You know, I've lived in the region for 30 years, and I haven't seen a storm that's caused this much destruction, you know, in all that time. There was a storm in 1986, Typhoon Kim. There was a super typhoon that really devastated the island, but I haven't seen something like this in a very, very long time.
Well, what's the Red Cross able to do in terms of relief for people there on Saipan?
Well, we're working, you know, again with our local government as well as the U.S. federal government partners like FEMA, and I've been in meetings with them most of the day, working on some strategies of getting relief supplies to the island. The airport, our commercial airport, just did open for daylight only flights in and out. The seaport is still closed. There was an oil spill and a fuel spill in the harbor. So our federal agencies are, again, investigating those spills and making sure that the seaports are safe to enter and exit.
It sounds like the damage is so severe that the CNMI might perhaps be looking at asking for help from offshore, from the United States or other aid partners.
No, absolutely. Well, we're already, you know, fully integrated with our federal emergency management agency, you know, which is based in D.C. They have a Region 9 office in Oakland, California, as well as a Pacific Area office in Honolulu, Hawaii. And they already have perhaps 30 or 40 personnel on the ground here in the Marianas now. So the role of the Red Cross is really involved in the kind of the more of the humanitarian side, the human side of providing families with relief supplies and food and water. The Red Cross now is providing food, 3 meals a day for all the residents in the shelters. So that's around 1,500 meals per day for those who are most adversely affected by the storm.
Well, speaking of the human side of things, I know there's been a price freeze ordered to prevent traders from ramping up the price of basic goods. Are some people trying to exploit the situation, or are people sort of trying to help each other out?
You know, the price gouging, you know, that often does happen during disasters. I have not heard or have any knowledge of any of that going on here at this time, so that's a good thing. But the thing that's a big concern for our community is that because the power grid was so severely damaged, and they're anticipating perhaps 1 month without power, that also means that the water supply will be affected as well. Most homes on the island, they have a small water catchment with a few hundred liters of water, but that's not going to take them more than 2 or 3 days. And then there really is going to be a shortage of water, potable water. So I know they're working on a plan to bring in like water tankers into the villages so that people might be able to replenish some water supply. But it's going to be, it's going to be a big concern for those of us in the, you know, in the humanitarian services.
All right. And we are back. It's Orly Benny Davis with Impossible Truth. We are so saddened to hear that there is a typhoon that is over Hawaii and Guam, and after it's going to aim toward, it's Thursday, 9 a.m. They have a prediction that it's going to go through the talk to Taiwan, and then they're going to go to it's passed by Vietnam and China, toward China and South Korea maybe. It's not sure what the path is, but all bets are open on this one. It's not funny because they're talking about it as, as a Category 5 hurricane with a sustained winds of 180 miles per hour. And as it continues Monday across the Pacific Ocean, by Tuesday evening, Shoulder was downgraded from super typhoon with winds around 130 miles per hour and gusts of 161 miles per hour, equal to a Category 4 storm, a Joint Typhoon Warning Center said. They are going to run out of water, and their emergency FEMA will have to sustain. But once it's going to leave the USA, who's going to take care of Taiwan and China? You know, I don't know about their FEMA there. That's why we need to have a center of emergency, global emergency for everybody, because we need to join in our forces and our effort to help every human being around the planet. And if we decide to create some force like this, it will be conducive for everybody, because nobody has to take any challenge alone. And at this point, we really need a big prayer from everybody to make this wind typhoon go away. It, as it comes, it can go. And we know, we believe that nature has its course, and sometimes it's awakened something, but we really hope that this typhoon will go away soon, because it's not funny and everybody needs it, especially this season. It's horrible. Kids are out and people are without water, without shelters. I saw a few, in the past, and they're saying that this is the biggest typhoon ever. I hope they're mistaken. I don't want to see it turning to be what they're predicting. Maybe it could be wrong for once in a while. All right, that was it. All my praying and blessing for best, recovery ever. Let's go to some more music, and we'll turn a little, we'll turn the story to the events of the world, I guess.
Tu cosa fai stasera? Questa atmosfera, ma non mi dire di no, per farti prigioniera.
Dario Baldembembo, cosa fai stasera? What are you doing tonight? That's amazing. That's a song of the 80s. It's a classic. It's something that you never forget. It's, love, love, love when you talk Italian. It's amazing how they make you feel different. And some might have, to take some time to enjoy it. We have some other information that I want to share with you. Let's listen to this.
Dawkins is famous as the author of The Selfish Gene, The Blind Watchmaker, and many other popular science books going back decades. But he's a controversial figure, out and about on Twitter these days, railing against fundamentalist religious beliefs and non-fundamentalist beliefs in ways that many have found objectionable. He has his own foundations for reason and science, one here, one in the US, designed to try and remove the influence of religion from education and public life. With religion, community relations and tolerance much in the news at the moment, we thought we'd get his take. In the wake of the Charlie Hebdo attacks, we're in the midst of a big debate, really, aren't we, about the relationship between religious fundamentalists and the rest of society. It was interesting that the former Archbishop of Canterbury on Newsnight last week said the debate isn't really one between Christians and Muslims, it's more between the secular society and Muslims, which I thought was an interesting observation.
Yes.
But what do you think the rules of the game should be between in a modern liberal democracy? What between these different groups who have very, very different belief systems?
Yes, I mean, I think that's a very profoundly important question. I think the rules of the game are that you should be allowed to believe anything you like, And of course, that's right. But that you shouldn't impose your beliefs on other people. And so any creed that thinks it has the right to say, not only do we believe this, but you've got to believe it too, or else, I mean, that is a very, very serious violation of everything that democracy stands for.
So let's take some examples. Burqa bans, they have a burqa ban in France. You wouldn't be in favour of that?
I'm not in favour of a burqa ban. It seems to me to be a violation of individual liberty. When I see a woman in a full burqa with just the slit, I feel personally offended. But it's an important part of what I believe, that what I feel personally is irrelevant. It doesn't matter what I feel. Nobody else should abide by what I feel. And that applies, of course, on the other side as well.
What about religious schools? So a community sets up a school, maybe pays for it itself, that doesn't subscribe to your views of education that you've set out today. And now, is that a freedom of speech thing for them to be able to teach what they want or not?
That's very difficult, because there we're trespassing on the tussle between the freedom of speech of parents to impose their views on children and the freedom of children to be educated without having erroneous views. And we now know that in some cases it definitely is erroneous. It's not a matter of opinion imposed upon them.
But you're not against teaching history and things like that
constructive way. I'm very keen on teaching history, teaching literature, very keen on teaching religion, as a matter of fact. I mean, teaching about religion, not indoctrinating in any particular religion, because that would go right against the spirit of critical thinking.
It's a tricky one, though, isn't it? Because you can't build a society on the basis that you know you're right and you know that other people are wrong, can you? Because the liberal society is... We don't have to make that decision.
No, that's right.
You can decide what you think, and you decide what you think. But you are really saying that they have to teach, children have to be taught in your creed.
Well, no. There is a difference. I mean, let me use the example you just used of the burqa ban. That's a matter of opinion. And there the society, it seems to me, has no right to impose on other people. Evolution is not a matter of opinion. It's a matter of fact. The evidence is as overwhelming as in the case of, that the Earth orbits the Sun. That's not up for dispute.
You are in the camp as, really, probably associated as being one of the most, and I think the disparaging phrase is militant atheists in the world, probably. What do you think of that phrase? What do you think of that accusation? And do you, if you like, revel in that place, or do you hate it when people try and, if you like, put you in the same category as fanatics on other sides of the religious divide?
Well, religious fanatics are apt to take the law into their own hands on occasion, aren't they, and actually threaten people, actually use physical violence.
But you choose to go onto Twitter. It's not a venue for scientific debate. You choose to go on Twitter. Just to take one example, a tweet in which you drew a very invidious comparison between the number of Nobel Prizes won by people from Trinity College, Cambridge, and the entire Muslim population of the world. Trinity College, Cambridge comes out on top of that comparison. Now, not disputing the factual basis of it, why make such an invidious comparison? Why raise that? Why raise the issue? What's the point of drawing attention to that?
It is a fact that in the Dark Ages and Middle Ages, the Islamic world was a beacon of scientific progress and enlightenment. And something has gone wrong. I had dinner with the then chief rabbi, Jonathan Sacks, a few months ago, and learned there the astonishing fact that between 20 and 25% of all scientific Nobel Prizes have been won by Jews. And I thought that was a stunning fact. It really is. I mean, when you think the total population of Jews in the world is tiny compared to really any other of the major religions. So I wanted to make this point that Islam has stagnated in the scientific field since the Middle Ages. And the best comparison to make would have been with Jews. And then I thought, oh, no, I can't do that, because that will really upset people because of Palestine, and I'm very sympathetic to the plight of the Palestinian people in Israel. So at the last minute, I crossed out Jews and stuck in Trinity College, Cambridge.
But I can think of much more gentlemanly ways of making the intellectual point that Islam has not been a great scientific contributor.
It's just a fact. Whether or not it upsets people is less important to me than the dramatic nature of the fact, which ought to be looked at. Somebody ought to be saying, why?
But you would agree that you pick an argument with people of religion or religions, don't
pick
you?
Pick an argument suggests
you
going
go
out
of your way to say things that are pointed that. About that religion or those groups of people.
It's a good point that the best way to convert people is not necessarily to tell them they're idiots. And I have occasionally seemed guilty of that. For example, I once wrote in the New York Times that anyone who doesn't believe in evolution is either ignorant, stupid, or insane. Now, that sounds like an extreme point of view. It's actually a factual point of view, because the word ignorant is not a disparaging word. I'm ignorant of all sorts of things, and so are you, I'm sure. And we would be quite happy to own up to being ignorant of many things, ignorant of music or ignorant of art or ignorant of baseball, whatever it might be.
I think a lot of moderate religious people are very turned off by your discourse.
Well, some may be, and that's a political, that may be my political error. There are...
Tactical error, in terms of, because your job, you see your role as trying to convert the world to your point of view, I think. I mean, that's...
I see my role as trying to persuade people to think for themselves and look at evidence. I mean, if they come round to my point of view as a result of looking at evidence, then so much the better.
Have you ever been wrong about anything important?
Oh, yeah.
Give me an example.
What? Well, I'd have to go into sort of rather recondite scientific matters, but I've been wrong on scientific questions and have said so. Scientists actually rather like being wrong. It's unlike politicians. They get a sort of kudos from admitting that they're wrong, because that's how science proceeds.
Richard Dawkins, thanks for talking to us.
Thank you very much.
The impossible truth. I interrupted it because the question of the matter is what are we doing with our religious beliefs? What are we planning to do with this world that, you know, they become bound by religious fanaticism and, you know, secularism that wants to fight it by all costs? You know, I don't agree in none of those methods because, as they said, and I repeat it, you have the freedom to worship whatever you want. You can be free of anything. You can do whatever you want as long as you don't abuse that person for their belief, as long as you don't push for your belief and make sure that the other, you know, is doing the same way that you want them to do. You see, the problem when you have capacity of freedom in the free world is sometimes we forget that, you know, free speech is not the freedom to criticize. You can say your opinion, but when is your opinion offensive to the other? It's not really opinion. It's actually harassing other person to believe or not believe. I'll tell you what it is. Sometimes, you know, the people are wrapped in their righteousness and the right to do, and sometimes they forget about the rights of the others. In Israel, we have a very, very strong understanding what God is all about, because it's you know, the Holy Land. We came about after 2,000 years in the diaspora, and we revived the Hebrew language, and we brought the Book of All Books, that we preserve it for thousands of years. It's the best sellers ever of you know, the book, the best book in the world. And we have the roots, the understanding, and, you know, the fact that you can say that it's spiritual or not, but the fact of the matter is you have history book, which the historian will call it, you know, it's only a story, but it is the important thing is to understand that it's more than that. It's been preserved. It means kept by the Jewish people and the Christian, obviously, too. Now, having said that, you have to come back to the fact, now they're coming back to the Jewish land, but they are all after 2,000 years of diaspora, 2,000 years of secularism, because they've been working and living among the non-Jewish people, and they wanted to be a part of it, which is respectable, and they want to practice the way they want. And sometimes, you know, when you're outside the Holy Land, you are not obligated to do the things like you would say if you are united as a cluster. However, some of them decided to keep it, and they've been a force in the society. They build up the country. They incredible, knowledgeable people. They come along and they kept on going. You know, Europe of the devastation of Holocaust brought you know, the shreds of the people that came from the smoke and the ashes of Holocaust. They came back and they said they don't want to know nothing about, you know, religion, because of Judaism they were prosecuted. And I want to clear that, because it wasn't because they I'm sorry, because they were Jewish only. There were, you know, other 20 million people got killed, and they weren't Jewish. So what was there? Well, it wasn't about you know, being Jewish only. It was about being the person in the light or in the dark. The people that wanted to worship that, wanted to eliminate anybody, everybody who doesn't look like they are. And it reminds me of this one of the Caesar that decided that, you know, God is so good and great that he lives alone. So he shall do the same. So he started killing everybody around him because he thought that God does it the best way. Nobody disturb him. So you don't really know why and when people decide to kill everybody else. And, you know, at the end, that Caesar got killed by his own son. The idea is, if we're pushing ourselves to the other, stating that whatever you do is wrong, it's disrespectful. It's not, you know, it's an obstacle to freedom. It's not my freedom is to be respected for what we are. That's what the gay parade is all about. That they want to be respected no matter what they are. It's not about being, you know, they don't want, they need their freedom, but they need you to overlook what they are, because just treat them the same. And that comes to religion and secular. People need to stop having boundaries and saying, you know, you guys, you know, this is that group, this is the color yellow, the color green, the color red. You know, we are a rainbow of people. We are together rainbow. The rainbow is not made by individual color. It's made by all of us. And, you know, no wonder that rainbow represents forgiveness in the Jewish faith, because it represents that when you are all together, God will forgive you. So we need that. We need that. All right, guys. It's Orly Benny Davis with Impossible Truth. I know we're running a half hour already, and we've been talking about the situation, you know, about in Europe, that tolerance is incredible. Now let's have some music, and we'll be right back. Oh, story di tutti giorni, the story of everyday people. You know, that's Riccardo Folli is one of my favorite one is in the Italian music. He'd been in a group Pooh for a long time, and then he went by himself and he created an incredible song. and titles and written love songs like represents stories of his life, but they represent like stories of everybody's life. And one story, a very sad story that represents somebody's life, is about to turn the page finally on their life for the good. So let's listen to this.
Bezrat Hashem, with thanks to God Almighty, my beloved husband, Jonathan Pollard, is completing this November 30 long, harsh years of incarceration in the United States. Jonathan has served his time right down to the very last day, to the very last minute. I'm relieved and I'm happy that our ordeal is finally coming to an end. I can hardly wait. I'm counting the days, the hours, the minutes, the seconds, until I can take him into my arms and we can close the door on the past behind us and begin to heal and to rebuild our lives. It's particularly at moments like this that I feel the strong desire to thank so many people who have been with us down this long, dark road, who've done so much to keep us strong, to keep Jonathan going, to keep his hopes up. I'm afraid if I start to name names, we'll start now, we'll never end. I hope to have an opportunity very soon to thank each and every single person that I can, personally and from the bottom of our hearts. I know that so many people are feeling relief and joy, and they want to share in our happiness and celebrate with us. But I have to tell you, what Jonathan and I need now more than anything else is a little bit of peace and quiet in our lives, a little bit of privacy, to be able to rebuild our lives, to be able to heal, to be able to begin to live like normal people in a quiet and modest way. I'm sure that everyone understands, whether it's public or the media, I'm sure you all understand our need for privacy and tranquility now. And I'm counting on you to help us with that. I want to thank you all very much. I want to thank everyone, this whole beloved, beautiful nation that stood with us all these years. Thank you very much, everyone, and God bless.
All right. We are back, and the good news is that Jonathan Pollard is completing his sentence. It was a little shaking up story in the Jewish community in America. Nobody wanted to touch it because they were afraid to be blamed by collaborating on stuff. The truth of the matter, and I said it thousands of times, you know, the American Jewry have no inclination to support Israel politically or religiously. They work on a different clock. They love, of course, to be Israeli, to come visit and everything, but they like to come back home and be in America because, you know, America is special, and they reflect, and they're American in their soul, and they are Democrat first, let's say. So I know Pollard made a big deal of, you know, incredible mistake, and he paid for it too. And I think that the lesson was learned loud and clear, and now he's going to be by himself with his family, and we wish all of the best. And we're sorry that Israel got dragged into it, because you know, it was is American citizen, of course, a Jewish American.
Generale, dietro la collina ci sta la notte, crucca e assassina, e in mezzo al prato c'è una contadina, curva sul tramonto, sembra una banda.
All right, that was De Gregori with Generale. Generale, you know, he was talking about a war. He said the war is over, General. The enemy ran away. We all said it. It's all over. You know, they went and they departed to the war, and now they came back. Now listen carefully. Many people are speculating right now these days that, you know, the idea of to go to the war in Iraq was a wrong idea. And I, you know what? I know that there was a standoff between the comments of Prime Minister Netanyahu and today the Honorable, the President of the USA, the British Secretary, the pussy gentleman, to blame the Iraqi war for the condition of Iran. It's like I don't know if you can say the connection is relevant, and I'm not going to even take a position on this, because it's much, much deeper than I would like to talk about. But we might come back on this on Monday when we have a show, and we're going to analyze Iran's condition and what Iraq was doing. Now, we started, the send-up with Iran started 30 years ago, and so, you know, after, you know, when they started kidnapped the hostage in the embassy, 1982, I guess, and we had all this Iran-Contra affair with the weapon that was sent to Nicaragua, to the Contra, you know, groups. We had a story involving it. Now, Iraq was, you know, the embryo for terrorism. Saddam Hussein went and he paid $25,000 for every terrorist, his family, that would like to go and drop a bomb on himself and kill people. He was the director of terrorism in the Middle East. Under his regime, 500,000 people disappear every year. Now, every time they're talking about they had a weapon of mass destruction and we didn't find them, but it's not true, it wasn't. I want you guys all to remember that we had the UNSCOM, the United Nations, you know, regulation factor that came about in 1988 with Scott Ryder, and it stated, you know, Saddam is not giving us a chance to inspect. And true enough, he wanted to bribe Scott after that to get off his back, because Scott Ryder was all over the place to find those and to inspect those nuclear weapon, non-nuclear chemical weapon, and what he had. And then they disappeared. Now, the story said that he was passing them, and we don't know where. But then, all of a sudden, they pop out in Syria in 2013, and everybody's saying, there is no connection. I see no connection. What do you think? If we didn't find them in Iraq, they went some other place. So some other place might be Syria, right? And they were collaborating all along. So the fact is that now they're trying to blame somebody on the war in Iraq. The war in Iraq, you know, after after 9/11. 9/11 happened. It wasn't a joke. We were attacked. 2001, we were attacked. America, the world, the free world, the leader of the free world was attacked. The guys went into war to defend the freedom of the free world. You guys cannot undermine the war in Iraq and cannot undermine the effort that President George W. Bush did. You cannot think that somebody influenced him. He sent the troops as he knew was the right thing to do. The fact that everybody was talking to him, everybody was telling him. I know I heard it, you know, the Jewish group, they weren't involved because they didn't have an opinion. They are in America, you know. Once you're in, you know, on the hill, capitalism, you really don't see the bubble. And if I'm listening to them, you actually know for a fact they are in the bubble because they don't have a clue what's going on outside sometimes. And that's what happened. And, you know, when you listen to your friends, what's going on in Iraq and what they do, we all knew that 2001 was in the middle of a riot. It was in the Intifada in the middle. And let's not forget the Camp David Accord, by the pressure of President Clinton, exploded in 2000 in the face of Prime Minister Barack. It exploded because they were pushing them. They're pushing us so much. If anything, you can talk about foreign affairs and you talk about President Clinton and his efforts, which is a lovely man, which we love dearly, and his wife are incredible. But pushing with, you have, when you ignite something on the ground, it can explode. You don't need to ignite a movement of such a level of peacemaking with people they don't accept to exist. You have to understand, every effort that people have to come and say, you know, Hillary Clinton, she wants to come and be the president of the USA when she doesn't have the clue about the fact that the Arabs don't accept Jewish existence. Nothing you could do about it. We had one miracle when Egypt came to play, but he got killed. He wasted his life on that. Rabin got killed in the process too. People don't absorb their...
All right, that was Margarita, a classic. Well, I apologize for all the interruption, but I guess, there are some issues that are too hard to touch. And now that we are talking about globalized world, we can accept everything all the time, everywhere. So it doesn't matter where you are around the globe. You know, we're listening, they're listening, we all together connected, and I don't mind you one bit. I really don't mind. I don't mind at all. I feel like I've been living in with open doors and open minds to embrace everybody and understand that, you know, the world is transparent and that's the way it should be. Any kind of other living won't be happy at the end of the day. So let's think what we want to do in the rest. This is summer. We have great beaches all over. And come on, guys, Israel beaches are fantastic. Crowded, of course, but if they start
giving us some space. If we start, you know, talking about, you know, having some nice space on the beaches in Italy, when you go to the beach, you spend 1 month on the seashore, you get a house and get an apartment and you spend the time there, you eat like crazy and you go at night all perfumed and looking good and with suntan, and you walk and you have your ice cream, which is fabulous, and you have fun. You know, life is about the little things that make you happy. Now, what about you guys? What have you been doing lately? Did you have enough time to enjoy your life? Because, trust me, if we start wrapping ourselves around the world problem, we'll never end up with anything. There are people who manage the world, and God bless them. Let's give them a round of applause and ask them to keep on doing the best part. And just remember that doesn't matter. And you know, John Kerry, the sweetheart, is a great man of this generation, and people will remind him. And sometimes they have a problem with his position, or is trying to get the little, you know, things going, and everybody's stopping because they're fearing. No, you can't fear anything. You have to keep on going. You have to remember there is tomorrow, and God is great, and the plan is there. And we just hope that the nature will work together, will give us some time of tranquility in the world, and more of time to talk about it, and maybe to turn, you know, problems to solution, opportunities, challenge to opportunities, hope to blessing, and blessing to actual manifestation of humanity in its best. I do wish you all the best in the world. This is Orly Benny Davis, and this is Impossible True. Thank you so much for being here with me. I know we had some interruption, but I'm not surprised. Tricky stuff we got sometimes here. But whatever it is, I thank Doug for his cooperation, and I hope you enjoy the Italian music. We'll talk again on Sunday morning with early. It's going to be early with some Israeli music, and we're going to talk about the Israeli politics, see if they pass the budget or not. We'll see. God bless you all. I love you. Take care. Talk to you on Sunday. Bye-bye.